I'm Chris Costello, and welcome to On Cue. I look forward to sharing with you topics and guests which may be out of the ordinary and some very extraordinary people who are making a noticeable imprint in today's world. The Olympics, the most prestigious and grueling sporting event throughout the world. Athletes competing for the gold spend years in training. Elite competitors with a fierce appetite to earn and secure their spot on their country's Olympic team. In 2008, Elizabeth Beisel was just 15 years old when she qualified for her first Olympic game and was the youngest competitor of the United States Olympic swimming team. Well, at a very young age, she competed with much older and experienced teammates who were well into their 20s. How did she prepare herself emotionally and physically to endure the arduous training needed for that one Olympic moment? At the age of 19, Elizabeth goes on to win two individual medals, the silver and the bronze at the Olympic Games in London. Between 2006 to 2017, this powerhouse of an athlete earned the second longest winning streak for a swimmer, held only to Michael Phelps. So how does one manage the daily stress of being an Olympian? For Elizabeth, this means changing her mindset before a race. And the ultimate stress release? Mastering the violin and showcasing with the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra. This woman has more heart and talent than anyone I know. And here with us to share her incredible story is three-time Olympian, two-time Olympic medalist, concert violinist, and Survivor contestant Elizabeth Beisel. Elizabeth, wow. Welcome to On Cue.
Thank you so much for having me, Chris. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, Elizabeth, I have been looking forward to this moment, having you right here on Cue. I've got to tell you, that opening, it just sends chills up me. I think of you, you're 27 years of age. Oh, my Lord. You're amazing. Just a person, athlete. But I'm going to ask you some questions here. First of all, stepping back for just a moment, when did you begin your training as a swimmer? When did this seed get planted that you wanted to become an Olympic swimmer?
So for me, growing up in Rhode Island, which is the ocean state, it's almost like imperative that you know how to swim because you are always around the water, the beach, the pool, especially in the summertime. So for me, I was always drawn to the water just because that's all I knew. And then I joined my first swim team at 5 years old, and I got really good at a very accelerated rate. And by the time I was 13, I was representing the United States on the national team. And so for me, I think the first moment that I truly knew that I wanted to go to the Olympics was when I was 7 years old. And I was sitting on my couch on a September afternoon watching the 2000 Sydney Olympics, and I saw swimming on. And it was one of those moments where I knew I had to do that. It wasn't a want, it was like a need. And so for me, after that, I remember every single practice that I went to, every single birthday wish that I made, every single time I heard the national anthem, the Olympics was on my mind. And it was crazy because 8 years later, I had that dream come true in 2008 when I made my first Olympic team. But, you know, it sounds all nice and fuzzy and amazing, but it really took a lot of hard work and sacrifice, especially for my parents and my family.
Well, see, that's what people don't realize. You know, we get all caught up in the Olympics and we get into the games, but you people have been training, I mean, for years and forfeiting a lot, too. You know, there's many sacrifices made when training to be an Olympian, as you know. So as a young girl, how did this affect you? For instance, did you have to forfeit going to your prom, hanging out with friends, the dating, all of that stuff? I mean, what were some of the sacrifices that you had to make?
All of the ones that you just mentioned, Chris. You know, and that's the thing.
That's true.
And I think I love to explain the Olympics as a photo of an iceberg where you only see the tip above the surface, and then beneath is this massive blob of everything that really makes you see that tip of the iceberg. And for me, that was the Olympics. You never saw the sacrifices, me missing prom or me not going to a Friday night party, you know, me always eating healthy, saying no to pizza, and, you know, just simple things as a teenager, like just going to a birthday party and saying no to the cake because I knew that wasn't going to help me get to the Olympics. And I think it boiled down to the little things that took a toll on me, but were also the things that I knew that I needed to do in order to be an Olympian. And so at the end of the day, I was going to do whatever it took to be an Olympian. As hard as it was to say no to prom, as hard as it was to say no to the pizza or whatever it was or the party, I had a goal. And at the end of the day, that was what I wanted to do.
Amazing. Well, you had the passion. And I think without the passion, you don't excel. But you did have the passion. You had that determination that you wanted to go to the Olympics. And you did. So in 2008, here you are, the youngest competitor. You're 15 years old, Elizabeth. And you qualify on the U.S. Olympic swimming team. You were. I mean, at 15, you're on a team of 25-year-olds. This had to affect you, right? You know, that age gap?
Huge effect on me. And I think that was one of the reasons why I grew up so fast. And I am a little bit of an old soul, because being exposed to such an older group of people that you're almost forced on with, you're going through this outer body experience, like the Olympic Games, with this really small group of people. And all I wanted to do was connect with them. But it's really hard to ask somebody that's already gone through high school, college, professional life, that's 25, to connect with somebody that doesn't even have their license yet and is a sophomore in high school. And even though I felt like people never wanted me to feel like an outcast, I naturally did. And that was something that I really struggled with, was trying to make friends and trying to connect with people on a different level, because I didn't know how to be that mature as a 15-year-old. But after spending a month with all these Olympians like Michael Phelps, like Natalie Coughlin, I had to grow up really fast, because that was the only way that I was going to get to talk to them. And so for me, that was a huge learning experience, and it really shaped me into the person that I've become today. And that when I see somebody that might feel like an outcast or behave like an outcast, I want to be the first one to welcome them in and let them know that, hey, I've been in your shoes. I know what it's like to feel like this, but it doesn't have to be like that. You can connect with somebody on a different level, and I want to be that person for them.
Yeah, see, that's so important, because I was thinking of the age gap, you know, the 15, 25. Did they take you under their wing? Did they give you the advice? I mean, you're competing with each other, but you're competing individually as well. I mean, did you have a role model of anybody on your team? Did they take you under their wing?
It's funny that you say that. So the role model that I had growing up in swimming was Natalie Coughlin. And she was by far my favorite athlete in the Olympics. And she was actually also one of the first athletes to sit down with me at a meal at the Olympics and ask, hey, how are you doing? Because it was always me sitting at a table alone, trying to eat my meal as fast as I could to get back to my room. And I'll never forget the day that Natalie sat down and she just simply asked me how I was doing. And that act of kindness and inclusion left such an imprint on me. And it was like, not only is this woman such an incredible athlete, but she's such an incredible person. And I think that's one of the things that maybe most people don't realize about us as athletes. You know, you watch our race and you watch our post-race interview and it's all nice. You know, we did a really, really great swim, whatever, but there's not much character development, especially as swimmers, because the Olympics are only on every 4 years. So you see us for like 5 minutes and then, oh, all right, on to the next batch of swimmers. So for me to really experience that with Natalie, it just showed what a great person she was, what a great leader she was. And that was one of the reasons why, when I was like 23 on my third Olympic team, I said to myself, I'm going to pay it forward. I'm going to do exactly what Natalie did for me 8 years ago and do it for somebody this year. So Natalie was definitely by far my most admired role model that I ever had.
Well, and you know, Elizabeth, too, is that whoever you mentored, even though they probably didn't know you were mentoring them, but you've touched somebody else, you know, somebody else's life, who's coming forth and saying, you know, my role model was Elizabeth Beisel because of this, exactly what you're talking about. You know, one of the things that I was really interested in was when you were on your swim team in high school and they thought you should give others a chance. You were just really way too good. So did this create a problem with you and others in your school who were also trying to get on the swim team? Because my first thought was the school should have been overjoyed that they had you on the team. But how did that affect you still going to school with peers?
Yeah, you know, it was a little difficult adjusting after the Olympics. One, because I all of a sudden was this quote unquote famous person, not famous by any means, but, you know, walking around the hallways of my school, Yeah, I was the Olympic swimmer, and people were always whispering about me, talking about me. But, you know, one of the hardest things was not feeling welcomed within the high school community, especially with swimming, because for me, high school swimming was the outlet where I got to be normal, where I got to go to swim meets riding the bus with my teammates instead of a private jet flying to China for the Olympics. You know, it was my chance to really, truly be just a normal teenager. And so when I started hearing all these things about how it wasn't fair that I was competing and that I was too good, I was taking away somebody else's chance, it hurt my feelings because I never was doing it for the glory. I was never doing it to be the best. I was doing it because I just wanted to be with my friends and peers and be normal for a little bit. And I never meant it to be a situation where I was taking away from somebody. To say the adjustment back from the Olympics was hard is probably a huge understatement. But, you know, practice makes perfect, and I got used to it over time. And I think at the end of the day, I just really tried to be a good person and see it from everybody else's point of view. And in turn, let them see it from my point of view and tell them how I was feeling about the situation. So a little bit difficult coming back, but I've survived, so...
You are a survivor, seriously. So the emotional hurdles, you had them in high school... You also had them during the Olympics, and you're training constantly. And I'm thinking to myself, did you ever compare yourself to others that you were competing against? Or how did you get over that hurdle of feeling maybe you weren't the best, but you wanted to be the best? And this one over here just won that. And this one, you know what I'm saying? It's that competing spirit.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you right now, I think comparison is the root of all evil. I think that is truly the one thing that really hurts us as athletes and as people in general. It's natural in our nature to want to compare ourselves. If you're competitive like me, you always want to be the best. And if there happens to be someone that's better than you, you constantly are hung up on what they're doing or why are they better than me? What can I do to be better than them? And you turn the flashlight over to them and what they're doing instead of turning it on to you and what you can do better. So for me, that was a huge learning experience in my swimming career, was stopping and just looking at myself in the mirror and saying, okay, Elizabeth, yes, this swimmer is better than you, but you don't control what they do. You don't control how fast they go. The only thing that you can do right now is control exactly what you do. And that comes down to what you eat, how long you sleep, how hard you work, how dedicated you are. And so for me, towards the end of my career, it was more so focusing on what I could control. And I've tried to have that pour over into my real life because now, you know, with social media and all, you know, Instagram, Twitter, everything, you're in constant contact with everybody else and you're always seeing what everybody else is doing. And it is difficult when you see somebody who has this personified perfect life when in reality, they're only showing you what they want you to see.
Exactly.
So you really have to take a step back and acknowledge that it's not always what it seems to be. And just focus on yourself and your own happiness. And everybody else is going to take care of themselves. So you might as well do that for yourself.
Boy, do I agree with you there. And it's such a good launching pad, too, for life, because things are constantly changing and evolving. But you did have to grow up fast. And I can see the maturity in you. I didn't know you when you were competing and stuff, but I can hear it in your voice. Just you're solid. And I love that. You're solid.
Thank you.
You know?
Thank you.
And it's nice to talk to somebody who's just really solid. But, you know, there was also pressure before, during, following the Olympics. And at times it had to be overwhelming. And I'm so curious how you handled this, especially being so young. I mean, a young person can only take so much pressure because they can't process. As you get older, you process differently. Was your family in there to help you? How did you do this?
So for me, it's such an interesting journey throughout my swimming career because I was at the Olympics 3 times at 3 very different points in my life. So me at the Olympics as a 15-year-old sophomore in high school was almost naive to the pressure. I didn't know what a big deal it was. I was just there because I swam really fast and I was having a good time. And so it's almost, you're right when you say I wasn't able to process that pressure. Fast forward to my second Olympics when I'm 19 years old, there's a little bit more pressure because I've done it once before. I know what to expect. And I placed 4th and 5th in my first Olympics and just missed the podium. So now heading to my second Olympics, there's the pressure of, all right, well, she got fourth and fifth as a 15-year-old. She surely should be doing better at this Olympics. She's more experienced. She knows what she's doing. And so there was pressure there, but I was also at the peak of my swimming career. Where there was pressure, there was also confidence. And I knew that I could handle that pressure because I was one of the best swimmers in the world, and I was confident of that. So fast forward to my third Olympics as a 23-year-old, and this is where the pressure became unbearable. This is when I had been to two Olympics before. I had a silver and a bronze, and NBC was labeling me as the gold medal favorite going into these Olympic Games. It's my last shot. I better do it now or it's never going to happen. And once you start reading into those headlines, you start believing them. And so where I knew I was still a really good swimmer, I also knew that the pressure was higher than it had ever been before, and I wasn't ready for it. And for me, those 2016 Olympic Games were a failure. And a failure not in the sense where I totally let my country down and everything, but I didn't live up to the expectations that were set upon me. And that's one of the biggest things as an Olympian to deal with is you're hyped up to be this hero, to be on the podium representing the United States of America. And the minute that you don't do it, you feel like a failure. And you know, one of the hardest questions for me to answer when I got back from those 2016 Olympic Games was, oh, did you win a medal? And I would say, no, I got sixth. And people would say, oh, okay. And they'd walk away. It was almost as if they didn't want to speak to me because I didn't have a medal around my neck. And that's one of the hard things as an Olympian to deal with is that so-called failure that you feel when you don't reach the podium. So it was a little difficult after the 2016 Olympic Games for me to recover from that.
You know, you're so grounded, Elizabeth. And, you know, you're the multi-hyphenate here. You're an accomplished violinist. I mean, can you undertake any more? You showcased as a soloist with the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra. Now, I'm curious, how did you find the time to balance the strenuous demands of training, competing, and becoming, you're a gifted musician. I mean, this had to be an outlet, correct? Yeah. For some of the pressure? Okay. When did you start playing the violin?
Yeah. And you're so funny when you ask, where did you find the time? Because I look back on my life now and I'm like, where did I find the time? Like, I couldn't possibly make time for that. This is so funny story. I actually started playing the violin before swimming. I went to a birthday party when I was three, and there was a classical violinist there, and I was immediately drawn to it, and I loved music as a baby. And so for that Christmas, I got a violin, and I started playing, and it was something that was an outlet for me with swimming because I'm a firm believer in balance in life. And I knew swimming was something that was going to be a huge part of my life. I was so good at it, and I knew I wanted to pursue it. But nothing in this life is guaranteed. And my parents were smart enough to know that and instill that within me. And they said, Elizabeth, you can do swimming your whole life, but one day your swimming career is going to stop. Whether it's because of an injury or because of age or whatever it is, that swimming is only going to get you so far. Violin is something that you can do for your entire life. You can be a violinist when you're 80 years old. You're not going to be swimming in the Olympics when you're 80. And so for me, it was like that happy place outside of the pool where swimming wasn't going well, or if I had a really bad season or I hated swimming in that moment, I would be able to go up into my room and lose myself playing violin. And it became very therapeutic for me. I would not have been the athlete that I was without violin. And I stand by that until the day I die. I'm so grateful that I had violin and that I still have violin because now I'm able to perform and do things that I wasn't really able to do while swimming. I was able to put the violin on the back burner for the Olympics. But now that the Olympics are over and that stage of my life is over, I can now turn to the new stage of violin and exploring all of these things that I never had time to do. So yeah, it's really wonderful to be able to tap into that musical side that I have.
Well, guess what, Elizabeth? We have a surprise for you. We have an audio clip of you playing the violin. Your talent with the strings, lady, equally matches your talent as an athlete. And I know so many of the listeners would love to take a listen, as do I. And here it goes. Thank you. This clip holds a real special meaning for you. And can you explain why this clip is so special for you?
I have the chills listening to it because I know exactly what clip this is. So that is a clip of myself on violin and the head Olympic coach, Michael Phelps' coach, Bob Bowman, on piano. And it was one of the first times that I had ever played in front of my Olympic teammates. At the Olympics, it's such a high-pressure place to be. You want to find solace in anything. And for Coach Bob and I, it was music. And that was our happy place outside of the pool. And I remember Bob really taking me out of my shell and being like, Elizabeth, you are so wonderful at violin. You need to put on a performance for your teammates. And he finally convinced me to do it. The team manager rented a violin. And Bob and I played for all 50 of us Olympic swimmers. And that was the first time everybody had heard me play.
That is so beautiful.
Yeah.
Where was the location that you played?
It was at our Olympic training camp in Atlanta, Georgia. And we had this massive team room that had a baby grand piano in it. And so that was the piano that Bob was on. We had all 50 of the swimmers sitting on the ground. And we started it off playing the national anthem. And then Bob and I went into our solo together. And I have the full body chills thinking about it because it was a huge moment for me too, because I was always so nervous. I would rather swim in the Olympics in front of millions of people than play my violin in front of a room of like 20 people. So it was really me coming out of, you know, a very my comfort shell. And Bob was able to get me to do that.
It's so beautiful. Your playing is absolute. It takes me back to a happy place. Seriously.
Thank you.
And I hope you never, ever stop playing the violin. You know, Elizabeth, you had once mentioned something interesting, that great does not always mean that you're the most talented. That can only come from an old soul. So can you explain that to me?
Oh my gosh, it's so true. Throughout my entire career, I had so many people, as most of us do, telling me why I would never be great. Whether it was because of me being too small, I'm from Rhode Island, I don't have the right coach, I went to the wrong college. And it was always frustrating because it was one of those things that I refused to ever believe. I was like, why could you ever say this? And I know that I'm not the most talented person. I don't have a body like Michael Phelps. I'm the shortest Olympic swimmer on every Olympic team. I come from a place that doesn't produce swimmers, but I was going to defy the odds and I would do whatever it took. And for me, it was working hard. For me, it was dedicating and committing myself to a level that most people aren't willing to do. And I think it's almost an excuse for people to use when they don't want to commit, they don't want to sacrifice. They say, oh, you know, I don't have the talent. I don't have Michael Phelps' talent. Well, guess what? You don't have to have Michael Phelps' talent to be great. You can have Elizabeth Beisel's level of talent, which, yes, I do have that. But what I have more so is hard work and grit and resilience. And I think those are the, you know, some of the few characteristics that I have that helped me reach the level that I made. Because it wasn't about the talent for me. You know, I'm not somebody that you look at and you say, oh, she's definitely an Olympic swimmer. Look at her big muscles. Look at how big her feet are. Look at how tall she is. I really do just look like a normal person. But inside of me is what sets me apart from everybody else. And I think a lot of people need to look inside themselves and see how much resilience they have and grit they have. And that, at the end of the day, is what's going to set apart a good athlete from a great athlete.
I agree with you because there's an old expression I love, which is if you think you can, you can. If you think you can't, you just won't. So it's the mindset too. It's that positive reinforcement within ourselves. A lot of times we look outside of ourselves to get the reinforcement, but it all starts from within you. Okay, so you're retired now from competing, you know, transitioning from the world of sports back into everyday life has had to present some even newer challenges for you. How did you manage to make that change? And did it come easy for you or were there more hurdles?
It was definitely a journey full of hurdles. I think when you stop your sport, especially at the level that I was at, swimming was my life. And the minute that I stopped, it was almost as if my life stopped. It was almost as if I was mourning a death of Elizabeth Beisel, the swimmer. And I had to reinvent who I was. And yes, swimming was a huge part of my life, but it wasn't who I am or who I will be. So for me, I really had to dig deep inside myself and look in the mirror and say, who do I want to become now? So, and that's many things. So I started saying yes to everything that I couldn't ever say yes to. So whether it was traveling or playing with the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra or going on a reality television show like Survivor or writing a book, I was going to do whatever I could. And for me, that entire process of saying yes was really cathartic for me because I was so used to saying no and having that excuse on ready. Oh, Elizabeth, do you want to go on Survivor? No, I have swim practice. No, I'm training. No, I have the Olympics. Whatever it was always a no. And so for me to switch that no to a yes really helped me transform my life into what it is today.
Well, Elizabeth, I hope so many people, and I'm certainly listening to what you just said, really incorporate this into everyday life, taking a no and in turning it around into a yes. I love that. And there's something else about you I absolutely admire and I love is you're a humanitarian. You travel the country promoting the importance of learning how to swim, but especially for families and children living in the underprivileged communities. And I've always supported that our young people today really need to have positive role models, people like yourself, that kids can look up to. In fact, you mentor teenage girls throughout a mentorship program called RISE, which was started by two of your Olympic teammates. Can you give a little bit more information on that?
Yeah, so RISE is a company that I am grateful to be a part of because, one, two of my Olympic teammates started it, and they're my friends, but also I didn't have that type of mentor growing up, and I wish I had. And so for me, it's providing a service and being there for somebody that needed it just like I needed it. And for me, it's giving back to the sport that gave me so much. And I look back on little 15-year-old Elizabeth running around the Olympic Games, wishing that I had somebody to talk to answer my questions, to guide me through that process. And even though most of the girls that I'm speaking with and mentoring aren't going to the Olympics, they deal with everyday issues that I dealt with as a 15-year-old, whether it's competition, nerves, mindset, mental health, family, whatever it is, I am there being an unbiased voice in their life to help guide them to live the best possible life they can live and live it happily and confidently. And especially in a day and age where social media is so prevalent in our society, I ask the girls to step away from social media, stop comparing yourselves to other girls, and focus on yourself. Do what makes you happy. And I try to instill that confidence within them. And that's a confidence that I didn't have when I was their age. But maybe me being there for them will let them have that confidence. And it goes back to what you said earlier, Chris. If I can just make an impact on one person, I've done my job.
Exactly. And I think it's just planting the seed because you just never know. There could be another Olympian out there, a young girl that you've talked to, where you don't even think you're mentoring, you really are. Who knows? Maybe one of them one day will become president of the United States and she'll get up there and say, I have to thank Elizabeth Beisel for this. I'm a big believer in that, paying it forward, and you certainly continue to pay it forward. Now, okay, Elizabeth, I'm a huge fan of Survivor, and you appear in the show's 39th season, Island of the Idols. Now, you said on the show, I will definitely not announce that I'm an Olympian, but how did they find out?
So, unfortunately, I have the Olympic rings tattooed on my right hip, and somebody had seen it, and I totally gave myself away. But so somebody had seen it, and I'm obviously more of like an athletic build. And so I think they put two and two together, and they just outright asked. They were like, hey, are you an Olympian? And I was like, well, I'm not going to lie about it. So, yeah.
No, I'm a violinist.
Yeah, and a violinist. honest. That's... I'm more than just an Olympian. But, you know, it's one of those things where I'm glad that I said I was, because, you know, in a game like Survivor, that's essentially based off of lying and manipulation and all of these things, it's nice to stay true to who you are in a game like that.
Oh, sure.
And so for me to really just be able to be myself out there and connect with people on a deeper level, I was really glad that I had sort of let that cat out of the bag, because it was one less monkey on my back to deal with along the line. But yeah, people found out pretty quick once they saw the tattoo.
I love that. I keep going, yeah. Elizabeth, you're 27 years old. Just as I think I have reached the end and there's a period somewhere, you come forth with something else. You've got a book coming out, correct?
I do, yes.
Is there a title to the book?
Yes. So the book is titled Silver Lining, and it is set to be published in February 2020. It was one of those things where it sort of just came out of the blue. Since retiring the sport of swimming, I do a lot of public speaking engagements. And every time I would go to one, people would ask me, hey, you have a book? Hey, you should write a book. And it got to the point where I was like, all right, fine. Like, I'll write a book. And it was, you know, it's strictly about my swimming career and the ups and downs and the adversities that I faced. But it's written so that a non-swimmer could read it. It doesn't dive into the technicalities of the sport. It dives into more personal endeavors that I had, whether it was at the Olympics or dealing with the highs and lows and the pressures of being an Olympic athlete. And I think it's pretty eye-opening, and it was very cathartic for me to write, because I realized that as wonderful as my career was, I did go through some hard stuff. And you never really dive below that surface level of your career until you start writing. At least for me. And so for me, writing everything down and remembering how I got to where I got was really, really interesting and beautiful. And so I'm excited to share the stories that a lot of people have no idea about that I went through throughout my Olympic swimming career.
Well, so I have another question. So when the book comes out, would you come back on the show?
I would love to come back on the show.
All right.
I would be honored.
I am looking forward to it. But Elizabeth, you have been absolutely wonderful. I could talk to you for another hour, 2 hours. You are amazing. Amazing.
Thank you.
I'm sure that the state of Rhode Island is so proud of you.
Thank
27
you.
Years of age. I can only imagine.
I can see my cheeks right now. They're so blushing.
We're going to go swimming, Elizabeth.
And you're
gonna
go swimming.
You can see my version of the backstroke. My arm will go back once and I'll be down in the bottom of the pool.
It's all right. We can go get coffee afterwards and totally forget about it.
Thanks for listening to On Cue. I invite you to visit our Facebook page, On Cue Chris Costello, for more information and for upcoming guests. Remember, each of us has a voice and a story. So until next time, share a smile, laugh often, be kind to each other, and let's help make this an even better world.